Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
You know, Dan, we have been talking a lot about the threat of hackers and ransomware thieves affecting small businesses. When we saw this new book, Cybersecurity, A Business Solution, by Rob Arnold, we had to invite him on the program. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Rob, I'm going to start off by asking about your book and ask you to outline for our audiences the basic premise of your book.
All right. The premise of my book is that cybersecurity is actually a business problem, not just an IT problem. It also encourages executives to look at what happens after an attack and invest in solutions like legal review and insurance policies that can save companies that get hacked despite elaborate preventive controls.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Dan, you go on from there.
Thank you. Rob, thank you for joining us. I'm interested in it's a business solution. We just had a reported experience last week with another cybersecurity break of virtually every customer of Yahoo. Did you see that report?
I'm aware of that.
Yeah. So when your entire system is corrupt, I guess it is a business solution because you're trying to figure out how you can keep your customers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, the book kind of explains cyber attacks create this this cash flow storm in which expenses are rising and revenues are falling. And as much as business owners want to prevent attacks, they've also got to be prepared to manage the cash flow. So the smart play is really to practice good basic hygiene and to do things today that are going to manage the cash flow when those basic controls fail to keep the bad guys out. And I'd give you some examples if you'd like.
Sure.
Good basic hygiene means things like encrypting sensitive communications, training employees to spot phishing attacks, and applying security patches to computers in a timely manner. But the other half of your time and effort really needs to be spent planning to deal with the cash flow problems that crop up when the basic hygiene fails. Because after an attack, it's too late to buy insurance or have your attorney revise contracts to limit your liability. So, similarly, with ransomware, if you don't have good system backups in place before the attack, they can't really be there to help you recover from it. And so the book kind of offers a step-by-step approach to managing this process and kind of monitoring it over time. And it even suggests some ways where you might be able to increase market share and profits by embracing cybersecurity.
Rob, where can we get your book?
The book's available on Amazon. I'm working on getting it available in Google Books. Google Books stopped taking new authors for a short period of time, so I'm working on that right now, so we'll have a digital copy. And then, of course, you can go to the book's website. It's cybersecurityabusinesssolution.com, and we actually have a discount if you sign up for our newsletter, and that would save you about the shipping costs. On the book.
How long have you been in this space?
Well, I spent 10 years as a consultant to small, medium, and large companies, and then I went back to graduate school and focused on answering two questions that came out of that experience, which no one seemed to be able to answer, which is how much should you spend on cybersecurity and how much security is actually enough? So those are the two questions I focus on in graduate school, and the book is really a culmination of that knowledge. And then I also founded Threat Sketch as a company to provide this critical risk assessment tool that you need to answer those two questions.
We saw the Yahoo X meltdown of their entire system, and
yep.
they weren't as forthcoming as they might have been. In fact, their history has been that they've not been as forthcoming with other hacks. But my
right.
question, you, in your answer to the other question, you talked about small, medium, and large businesses.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of numbers, there are infinitely many, many, many times small businesses than there are medium or large businesses. What are the challenges for the small business that they're not paying attention to that's leaving them so vulnerable?
Really, so the difference between the large companies and the small companies are, one, it's a matter of resources. Obviously, large companies have more dollars to throw at the problem. But what happens is when the larger companies shore themselves up against certain types of attacks, the hackers turn to automation. And it's almost the same economics that drives spam, right? You can go out with an automated attack and try and fish W-2s from 1,000 companies, and you can do it for pennies on the dollar. And so if you only get one or two companies to send you their employee W-2s, it still makes financial sense for them. So there's this economic incentive for the hackers to just try and find the people who aren't doing anything in order to protect themselves. And there's so many small businesses out there that aren't doing it, it makes it lucrative for them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. They just don't pay attention
Dan,
to it.
Yeah.
Dan, can I jump in and ask, what are two or three things, Rob, you would suggest, are the minimum small businesses should do to protect themselves?
Well, that's kind of that is a moving target. But right now, I think one of the most important things that small businesses can do is look into two-factor authentication for every account that they have, including email and banking. And two-factor authentication is that thing where you put in your password, but then you're required to also enter a small code that comes off of either a token that you carry, or it's texted to you in on your smartphone. Or sometimes there's an app on your smartphone that generates the code. But that's kind of the baseline right there. And then the next thing you need to look at is determining what of your data is really sensitive in terms of, you know, what would the liability be to you if it was lost? And I go back to that W-2 example where a W-2, you know, operationally, it's not worth a whole lot of money to the business, but to the employee, when it gets lost, it's worth a fortune, and it also exposes the business to a lot of liability. So finding those key pieces of data that either are worth a lot to your revenue stream, or they represent a huge risk in terms of liability, and then locking those down with encryption and making sure only the people that absolutely need to know have access to that information. So those are kind of the basic things.
In this world, especially small business, bring your own device is something that's become popular, where employees use their own devices. And that seems to be a vulnerable point for many of these attackers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, small businesses like to keep their employees on call all the time, and having them have their smartphones with all their business information at their fingertips is a wonderful productivity boost. But the flip side is, of course, it creates this liability that nobody was really expecting. So the best thing you can do is have good mobile device management system in place where you can lock down or wipe any kind of stolen cell phone or smartphone or tablet device as it goes if it gets compromised. And the other thing is to enforce good passwords on there. And so your mobile device management software will let you enforce those rules even on phones that aren't owned by you.
Dan, back to you.
Yeah, that's so. I just need to go back and clarify what you just said. Is mm-hmm. that you? Are you saying that an individual could have a business, could have liability off of somebody else's phone, a customer phone?
Not off a customer's phone, but off of the employee's phone. So if you've given an employee sensitive data on their phone and that gets out, that's where the liability comes into play.
I see. I don't mean to be overly critical of my contemporaries, but by and large, are small business people too busy to really pay a serious amount of attention to cybersecurity?
They are incredibly busy, and they're incredibly focused on even more fundamental things like making payroll, right? That's what they really worry about from day to day. But, you know, with the stories that have come out in the news recently, we've definitely seen an uptick in small business owners wanting to make an investment. But, of course, the solutions can be quite expensive sometimes. And any good small business owner is not going to want to just go out and invest money in something that they don't know what the return on that investment is going to be. And ironically enough, that's the exact problem we try to solve for these small businesses, is to say, okay, let's look at this from a financial standpoint and figure out what would the return on investment be for a given investment. So it's almost like, because it's almost like doing a break-even analysis, but you're doing it on what you aren't going to lose instead of what you will gain. And that gets a little It's very complex, but you can make some good decisions if you have good data and a good person to help you interpret that data.
I'm not gonna put you on the spot by asking you about a specific company as much as I'm mm-hmm. going to ask you about that I see, and I'm sure Don sees it all the time. I would say more frequently than weekly, I get these invasions in my system who want to clean up all the corrupt files and do all this stuff, and just click here and we'll do it, and you've got 961, 1150 or 325
right.
that need to be. And are these systems worth anything?
No. The vast majority of them are simply scams getting you to load software on your machine, but then they can take control of that machine and every other one on your network and use those in botnets that they can use to attack other companies and listen to your communications. Those things are by and large, and I can't say that all of them are, you know, I think there are some well-meaning companies out there, but by and large, avoid those like the plague.
I had a problem with my computer, and I called Apple. And they have this thing now where they can actually see your computer, go in and look at it, and remote processing. And they got rid of all of these things that had snuck into my computer. And they said that the Apple in and of itself has great cybersecurity. And when these things come into your system, they actually degrade the quality of security that you have with Apple. And what I'm curious about, not everybody works on Apple. A lot of people work on PCs. Is there a particular software for a small business that is a kind of a basic software package that you like that could help provide some level of security that you could recommend?
I don't recommend specific packages, but I do have some guidelines, and that is, first of all, to make sure that you trust the origin of the software. So there are big manufacturers like Avast and McAfee and Symantec that are out there that are fairly well known, and you really want to try, if for a U.S.-based company anyway, you want to stay with a U.S.-based security provider. Even the federal government recently has decided to remove all the Kaspersky software off of their computers because of their tie to the Russian government. And you can imagine that it's not a very good idea to have someone in a nation state with whom we don't have exactly copacetic relationships providing security software. And small business owners need to make that same decision. So figuring out who you want to trust is probably the most important piece, rather than which individual software package you decide to go with.
Dan, can I interrupt just for a minute?
Sure.
We're talking with Rob Arnold. His book is Cybersecurity, A Business Solution. We will be back with more with Rob after this word from our sponsor.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.
We're talking with Rob Arnold. He's written a book. He's an expert on cybersecurity, and it's called Cybersecurity, A Business Solution. Back to you, Dan.
Yeah, Rob, I'm concerned about, as we look at what's happening on the global stage, what are your sense of the cybersecurity threats from China and North Korea and some of those Asian nations? Is it real or is it hype?
No, I think there's absolutely a great deal of concern out there, and for small businesses as well. Cyber espionage, just like the Cold War that we went through in the nuclear era, was really one of economics, right? We raised the bar in terms of defense so high that it bankrupted our foes. And they learned from that, and so did other people that are watching us. And so cybersecurity on the world stage is a game of economics, and stealing trade secrets, getting access to the SEC filings, which happened recently, so that people can make trades on the stock market with insider knowledge. All of those things are of deep concern from a global perspective.
This is fascinating, Dan. If I can jump in with a question while you're thinking. Many small, what do you do after with ransomware and let's start with ransomware, where they lock up your computer and say you have to pay a fee. What is there any prevention you can do beforehand, and is there anything you can do afterwards?
Well, the important things to do ahead of time are, one, have good solid backups. And those need to be disconnected from the system itself, because if you're just backing up to, let's say, a USB-attached hard drive, well, they'll encrypt that too. And so now they've encrypted your backup and your hard drive. So in this case, a cloud-based backup that's disconnected from your system makes a lot of sense. And you need to time that so that you don't lose more work than the latest backup. So if a week's worth of work isn't that big a deal to lose, then, you set your backups for every week. If losing a day's worth of work is super critical, you may actually go down and have hourly backups done to make sure that you're protected. And then the other thing that you want to do is train yourself and your employees to avoid phishing attacks, which are kind of the most common avenue for installing ransomware, is to send you some link, an email with some link on it that looks fascinating, and we click on it and we follow the prompts, and the next thing you know, we have the ransomware notice popping up saying, yeah, you have to send us, so many Bitcoin, or we're going to delete all your files. And then in the aftermath of that, I highly recommend involving your local police department. The local authorities really need to help guide you through this and make sure that, you know, for one thing, you shouldn't be paying the ransom, because all you're doing is inviting them to come and do it again. And second of all, we need to develop a pattern. We need to find what the patterns are for these ransomware attacks. And by reporting that to the authorities, we get to build kind of a model to say, okay, well, this is how they're getting into the systems across the United States. What can we do to prevent those? So unless you participate in sharing that information, then it makes it harder for us good guys to try and figure out broad-based solutions. Does that kind of answer your question?
Oh, very, very definitely. I have a lot more, but Dan, back to you.
Thank you. Rob, you talk about cybersecurity, a business solution. So if I'm a small business, what percentage of my overhead should be spent on cybersecurity in terms of dollars and cents?
Right. And that's kind of a hard target to hit. You kind of have to back into it from your actual exposure. And the book lays out the process for getting to that. And I wish I could tell you it was as simple as saying, well, you should, you know, allocate 5% or 2% of your overhead. But it's a little more nuanced than that. Now, if you just need kind of a ballpark, well, what are some good numbers to start with? You start with your IT budget, whatever that is. Let's say that you spend 5% of your overhead on IT, whether it's cloud services, servicing the hardware and software that you have, buying new hardware on a 3 or 5 year cycle, and then use somewhere between 5 and 20% of that number is what you should be spending on cybersecurity. And there is this academic there's this academic limit that the Gordon Lebb model kind of predicts that once you've determined the value of your intangible assets or the assets that are, you know, being protected in terms of cybersecurity, no more than 37% of that value should be spent on cybersecurity, because after that, it's the point of diminishing returns, that you're better off then at that point just preparing for the inevitable attack.
Well, one of the things that concerns me, and I'm a novelist, I write fiction, and I wrote a trilogy on radical Islamic nuclear terrorism. Mm-hmm. And I talked about the destruction of the cloud service system through the use of nuclear devices exploded in the atmosphere above the Earth. And we're talking about that in real time. I wrote that in 2012. We're talking about that in real time today, is that one of the threats of North Korea is that they could send a nuclear device up into the atmosphere on its way supposedly to the United States, but create a electromagnetic pulse which could destroy the internet and more specifically the backup in the cloud and the server farms. Does that give you any concern?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a concern that we have now. The way the internet was originally designed, it was actually designed specifically to withstand a nuclear attack, the way we've gone about making the internet more efficient from a cost standpoint, we've kind of gotten away from some of the basic tenets of the original internet in terms of its interconnectivity, so that if you blew out any one section of it, it would just automatically repair itself and route around the damage. So there's some concern about that. And, you know, if you really want to make sure that you're protected against an attack like that, your best bet is to use multiple cloud providers and splitting your data across multiple providers, because the physical data will reside in different data centers across the United States. And so you're basically playing a game of saying, well, okay, if North Korea detonates a device over California and they take out all the West Coast data centers, then at least the East Coast data centers will keep up and going. And even Google and Amazon have some of that redundancy built in. But for sure, if there's ever a physical cyber attack like that, we're going to pay a pretty steep price in terms of our productivity and not being able to conduct business as we do on a normal day-to-day basis.
So let me move to a more mundane question.
Okay.
What is the challenge in cybersecurity when we have so many employees that have access to the internet and use it for other than business purposes?
Yeah, I wish I had a magic bullet answer to that. It really comes down to setting policies and setting cultural tone, and all of that comes from the business owner. The business owner has to make a clear distinction that, okay, you're at work, you're using this computer, which I've given you to use for business purposes, and to keep us all safe, please don't do your personal computing on that. Now, the degree to which you monitor and enforce that is, again, something that goes along with the culture of the company. And some companies thrive on allowing their employees a great deal of freedom. Some companies are very concerned about locking down everything that goes through there because they've made a commitment, much like banks have, to their client of, hey, you give us your information just like you give your money to a bank and we'll keep it safe. So it really depends on the business that you're in and what kind of culture you're trying to foster within your organization.
I hate to break this up. It's been illuminating. We're talking with Rob Arnold. He's written a very fascinating book, Cybersecurity, A Business Solution. Rob, tell us how people can find you and your book.
Well, let's see. They can find the book at cybersecurityabusinesssolution.com. And my company is Threat Sketch, a funny little name that we came up with. And our website is threatsketch.com. And so we'd
can you spell it
love
out
to have
for,
you. Yes.
And Rob, I'm interrupting you. Spell it out, please.
Yes, I will. Threat Sketch is threatsketech. .com.
We have to ask, how did you come up with that name?
Well, it's very hard in this day and age to find a good, short, somewhat catchy name that for which the domain name has not already been snatched up by someone. So we went through several different iterations, and we liked the idea that basically we're making a thumbnail sketch of the threats that a business faces. And so that kind of concept caught on, and from there we picked the name and went after the trademark and purchased the internet domain and so forth. So that's how that came to be.
Well, as a fellow author, and Dan is too, what did you think about naming your book that?
You mean picking the name Cybersecurity, A Business Solution?
I'm calling it Threat Sketch, which is a very catchy name.
Gotcha. Well, I kind of look at the reason I didn't is I look at the product that we make at Threat Sketch, which is a cyber risk assessment, specifically a strategic cyber risk assessment. So I look at that as the Threat Sketch, and really the book is an entire process for which our little product is one piece of that larger puzzle. So I needed a more encompassing name for the book since it covered a lot more than just doing strategic risk assessments and how those get made, and nobody really wants to see how that sausage factory works. So that's why I didn't name the book after the company.
We've been talking with Rob Arnold. We wanted to sign off, but he brought up some other interesting points. It's Cybersecurity, a Business Solution by Rob Arnold. Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much for joining us. I know I learned a lot. I think Dan did, and I hope our audience did as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book. Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like the change. I'm Dan Perkins for Recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
So do we have our next guest, Don?
Absolutely.
This is Tom Hamm.
Hi, Tom. This is Dan Perkins. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great.
You've been one very patient guest listening in.
I'm Tom taking Hammond notes.
Good. Tom Hammond is Executive Vice President of Bolt Insurance Agency, and he's here to talk about property and casualty insurance, which many small business leaders sometimes ignore, much to their peril. But more equally as important, Bolt has an interesting new way of approaching it. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tom, tell us a little about yourself and your organization, then I have some questions for you.
Sounds great. So I started with in the insurance business 30 years ago and started with a large carrier, the Hartford, and was able to look at auto, home, small commercial across the country. And just about 7 years ago, ended up starting with boltinsurance.com. And really our focus has been around distribution of products for personal lines and especially commercial lines for small businesses.
So are you a broker or what is Bolt Solutions?
Technically we're an online agency, Bolt Insurance, but we also have a wholesale arm where small independent agents can also subscribe to our software. So we're really built around a software company that helps bring insurance products to the marketplace, either through face-to-face transactions with independent agents, but also online or direct, if that's the way the small commercial business owner wants to shop.
So I want to ask you what I think is an important question for the person who's considering setting up a small business. Much has been written, Tom, about the need to incorporate your business to create a a barrier so that if you have an S corporation, a C corporation, a limited partnership or a limited liability company, your financial exposure for the activities of that entity are limited to the capital contributed to the incorporation or the entity. But what is the role, or is there a role for Arizona Mission and liability insurance?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when we started Bolt Insurance a while back, we actually interviewed 400 small business owners about how they felt about insurance, what were they thinking. And I think everybody came forward and said, well, I understood that I needed to start an LLC as an example, but I was going to wait. I'm waiting now till my insurance or till my business grows until I think I really need insurance because I really don't have a business yet. The problem with that is you have the liability out there that's already there, and you're already exposed. So, you know, there's a bunch of statistics about 50% of micro businesses, maybe people or business owners with 1 to 5 employees are still not insured. And we like to say they're insured, but they're just self-insured at this point. They're using all their assets to insure. And part of the reason why is small businesses, like big businesses, get sued every day. So 1 in 3 businesses will be brought to trial or attempted to be sued. And what people don't understand is the insurance not only covers your liability in general or your property or maybe your employees, but it also helps defend you if some frivolous lawsuit surfaces, which can most likely ruin a business only because it'll distract you, it'll take you offline from running your business, and also it can be very expensive, and that's really what the insurance is there for, to help protect you.
So if I'm starting a new business, and I've got it incorporated as an LLC, what is, in your opinion, what is the basic or the minimal types of insurance that small business person needs?
Well, it really goes through four, I'll try to be as generic as possible, but there's really 4 different levels. There's liability insurance, and then there's property insurance. So it all depends on your business type. If you're just really a landscaper and you don't have a lot of equipment, you might want just liability insurance as an example to make sure that you're covered if you damage property. But if you have a large business with a bunch of computers, as an example, and you need property, there's something called a business owner's protection, which is liability and property together. And then there are individuals that are actually consulting. They're giving their opinions. They're actually providing services that are professional. And they need E&O, or what's called errors and admission, so that whatever advice they provide or whatever service they provide, even a beauty salon operator, they need coverage to make sure that they're not being sued for the advice or what the recommendations or services provide. And then in general, there's also, if you have employees, you might start a business right away and have employees. It's the law in many states, if not all, that you need to have workers' comp insurance at that point. So those are probably the 4 categories to ask about right away. And one thing just before you're starting a business, there are policies that are $500 or $600. It doesn't have to be as extreme as people think from a cost standpoint. There are affordable small business policies out there.
Okay. There's we have the distinction in the United States as perhaps being the most litigious society in the world. So that do you think that the idea of incorporating is a defense mechanism at all, or is it just something that people just do?
Well, I think I'm not a lawyer, but I think there's a lot of other reasons. I think it's important, and it's been, and depending on the business type, there are many ways to incorporate. But again, I would say you need to back up. It won't protect you from everything, but it, you need to, if you want to persevere in your business and not, you know, lose all your time and money and effort to something frivolous, that's where the insurance can back up the structure. You know, we were talking about the 18 million businesses that are incorporated, and our tax guy was talking about there are a lot of just Schedule C businesses. They're not even incorporated. If you're a sole proprietor, you don't have any employees, you don't really have – if you're a consultant or and you basically give advice, you might want to set up an LLC or whatever. But is there – is there one thing in the insurance protection area that you think is a core policy that people need to own?
Well, it's difficult depending on the business, but if I had to answer that, I would say general liability is the first one. So general liability is core only because this is the one if you're stepping on someone's property to as a handyman to fix something or you're required to get a job. There's some states that require you to have a certificate of insurance to actually be in business or at a trade show or at a craft fair or anything like that. So that would probably be the first one you need to go after and get from a standpoint of protection and to be able to get more jobs in the future.
Okay. Don?
Tom, I'm going to give you a funny one, which is plaguing business owners in New York City. There's a man who is handicapped, and what he does is go around and find establishments that are not compliant with the Americans for Disabilities Act, and then he sues them and wins between always with the same law firm, by the way. And he sues them for $10,000 or $20,000, and I'm curious. I know it's a specific case, but is there any insurance that covers something like that?
Well, that's what your business protection insurance would be cover if you're sued for something of that nature. And you know, if someone is doing this and it's a cottage industry for them. That's why having insurance is important because you're going to have the backing of, you know, a lawyers that have seen this before that may be able to investigate it further than you know, maybe your local lawyer or the lawyer that you, you know, just are talking to about an LLC. So that's the reason why you want to have insurance to find those things and make sure that you're not being treated or sought out. I mean, that one has gotten a lot of press. There are others that are similar, and you know some are also around phone calls or faxes. I mean, we've recently had a client that started their business and sent out 1,000 faxes. One of those faxes went in the state of Connecticut to a fax machine that was not of that business, and they turned around and you know they have a lawyer. They run this business, and they ended up with a $10 to $15 million lawsuit at first. Of course, they want to settle for a couple of $1,000s, but it's that type of hassle that'll take you online, offline for months and really take time away from the business and why you started. So that's the reason why you want to have the base coverage at a minimum.
Both Dan and I think, agree with you. You need it. I sit on the board of a medical marijuana nonprofit here in New Jersey. And as you know, marijuana, it's legal, by the way, to raise marijuana, but it's illegal to sell it in federal law and depending on it. And we have been involved with any number of lawsuits involving any number of things. And it has been a learning experience going through working with attorneys for our various policies. And I keep saying to our chairman, thank God we have insurance because we could not have survived without it. But we were a special case. That's my lead into questions. What about nonprofits? People who develop nonprofits, should they also have these same protections?
Absolutely. I mean, there's our special policies associated with them, but it's, you know, every business has its ins and outs, and depending on the size, what's required. So it's definitely something that's there. There's also things for E&O and
errors in admissions, that would be important in categories like that. So that's another area for sure.
Tom, in looking at insurance, as we said earlier, there are a lot of Schedule C businesses. Can a small businessman who's not incorporated or an LLC or a limited partnership, can they get some protection out of their homeowners policy, and can they beef up their liability limits under homeowners?
Yeah, typically is not an easy question to answer. There are some growing endorsements on what we'd call a homeowner's coverage, and there are some, but it depends on the carrier. Some carriers have specifically written it out, and it really is important for you to understand that and talk to a professional about it, especially when it comes to auto insurance, if you're using your auto in business.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some other really growing policies on the personal line side that allow you to have a small office in-house. It allows you to have some liability coverage for people visiting, maybe your office if you're a consultant, or if you're actually a beauty salon operator with a chair, in your basement and people are coming over. So there are policies for that, very affordable, and you need to ask a lot of questions in the personal lines, because typically personal lines will accommodate some businesses, but depending on what you do in your business, you may be running the risk of actually excluding some type of including some type of exposure which you didn't understand. So that's why it's always important to talk to someone like an independent agent or someone that knows the insurance to make sure that whatever coverage you can get is going to cover where your business is and where it's going to go.
For our guests, we're talking with Tom Hammond. He's the Executive Vice President of Bolt Insurance Agency, and he's here talking about insurance in general. But also, we want to give him an opportunity. Tom, you wanted to talk about how your company is so unique and has an approach that people should know about.
Yeah, thank you. It's great. One of the things we see, especially with insurance, is 70-80% of the people who are shopping for insurance or trying to learn about insurance start online. And Bolt Insurance has a strong online base at boltinsurance.com. We try to provide as much information to the small business owner as possible. There's a lot of information depending on your business type. We'll profile exactly what you need and to provide some education about insurance if you have questions. But we also have licensed insurance professionals that are available Monday through Friday, and you can make a phone call and get any question you need asked or get a quote online. And one of the things that we provide in the software, we try to make it as easy as possible, is we're getting multiple quotes from carriers across the country. So that's like carriers like Liberty Mutual, the Travelers, the Hartford, and others. And the reason why that is so important, especially in small commercial, is that different carriers have different specialties, and depending on if you're a management consultant or you're a landscaper or a plumber or you own a craft store on Main Street, there are going to be different carriers, all good carriers, but everyone has focused in on a specific silo or an expertise. And the great piece about our development and our platform is it allows you to have one single input of your business in a small, smart interview and come back with multiple quotes immediately. So you not only get great coverage, but you get it at the right price.
So are you allowed to do business in all 50 states?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're licensed in all 50 states. And, the coverage has changed by state. And you may have a great slate of carriers in Illinois and not as many in Hawaii and Alaska, but we're definitely open and have most all of our products in all 50 states.
So with that, we've got a couple minutes left. I wanted to follow up on what you just said. There is a discussion, according to the president, in the healthcare proposal that he wants to knock down the state barriers. Now, I've been working in the insurance business as a consultant for quite a number of years, and I know that the regulation of insurance products, whether it's life, health, annuity, automobile, whatever, is regulated at the state level. There is no regulation except for variable annuities, which are our variable life products, which are securities, which come under the jurisdictions of the SEC. But there is no central government insurance oversight. If we think that we can, or if the president thinks he can go in and knock down the walls and allow cross-state competition for insurance, how difficult is that going to be to accomplish?
Well, as your prior guest said, you know, I don't have a crystal ball on what is going to happen with all this. And I'm not sure it's totally on the list when you talk about our line of business for property and casualty. I think it would be extremely difficult in a lot of ways. And part of the reasons why, I mean, if you know or don't know, that all the policies and products are filed at an individual state level, and they're all rated in different ways based on those states. So not only is it just open the license up, but you'd have to change all of the products through all the companies. So I would imagine this has got a long lead time in the auto, home, and small commercial spot.
Okay.
But the other piece on that is that, you know, we're insuring for perils, and those perils are different by region. So even if you broke it down and anybody could insure across the country, I can tell you we spend a lot of time, 20% of our staff's time, in educating them and specializing them in certain areas. So what we have one group that just handles Florida alone. And, you know, Florida is definitely a challenge when it can come to weather, especially on insurance. And so carriers come in and out. We try to be experts in those areas and make sure that we can understand what's available, what products are there, and how can we make sure we can maintain the best coverage for the right price.
I find it interesting, Tom, that your reps can be licensed in every state to conduct business, and yet companies may be licensed to do business in every state, but there are restrictions of whether or not they can go from one state to the other on a different policy form. So there's a as I said to some other people, there's a fiefdom there where you've got the state insurance commissioners who regulate what's going on in their states, and they allow the brokers to come in and be registered in state after state, but they control who can sell life products, insurance products, whatever, in a particular state. So I think that's going to be a challenge under Obamacare to make it more competitive by opening up the states. But anyway, Tom, thank you for being with us. Give us your website again where people can contact you.
Yeah, that's boltinsurance.com.
Okay. We'll put that on our website tonight. And we thank you for your time and your great insight. And we hope to have you back sometime in the future. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Well, Dan, we're getting down to the last five minutes of the show. Always a difficult time to cram everything in. You know, you've been asking about Obamacare, about all of the President Trump's efforts. What is the one single area that you would like the president to address and get accomplished in the next 6 months?
Wow. Well, obviously, I would like to see our healthcare system, as one person said, if Obamacare was such an abomination, why can't we just go back to where we were before?
And I think that the stuff that I'm seeing out of the House is not as close to what Mr. Trump wanted to do as many people thought, myself included. I don't know what's going to happen. There's a vote tomorrow, or Thursday, excuse me, a preliminary vote on the, out of the House. And a lot of people say it's going to be a telltale vote. Now, they'll send a bill. If it passes, they'll send a bill to the Senate, at which time the Senate will then draft its own language, have its own hearings, and build its own scenario. And then we'll have a conference committee between the House and the Senate. Whether we can get Obamacare replaced this year, and I saw recently the calendar of when the Congress is going to be in session over the next 12 months, over the next balance of the year. Believe it or not, there aren't a lot of days that the Congress is going to be in session. So I don't know if they can do that. I think, however, from an economic standpoint, the most important thing that the Congress can do is pass tax reform. And it may be just as difficult to do tax reform as it is a tax reform as it is Obamacare. But as our guest said when we were talking about taxes, there hasn't been any significant tax reform since Ronald Reagan in 1986. We need it. We need it better than we have, and we need to do something about getting that money back, put make our corporations more competitive. So both are very important to me. But I think in overall importance to where we're headed as a nation, I think tax reform is the most important thing I'd like to see done in the next 6 months, sir. And you?
Well, I'm going to say something totally different, which is regulations. I think particularly in the small business area, someone told me that in the Obama administration, enacted more regulations than the entire that had been enacted in all of American history since the Declaration of Independence, and I didn't believe it at the time. But I was talking to an NYU professor over the weekend, who was doing surprisingly a study on that. He's at the Stern School of Business. And he said, based on his preliminary analysis, it was true. There were more regulations enacted, particularly in the last 2 years, than in any time in American history. And a majority of them, he said, surprisingly affected small business more than any other part. So if you wanted to ask me, based on that and based on my own feeling, I think what I'd like them to do is just to start unwinding many of these regulations and let us going back to a little bit more freewheeling economy so that we could get on with the business of doing business rather than of reporting to the government.
Well, I would follow that with a question to you. I know that the president's issued an executive order, and he said that any new regulations can only be implemented with the elimination of two other regulations. But, you know, if these executive orders and these regulations issued by the bureaucrats have the effect of law, and there's a bureaucracy involved in and everything else, you just can't say, well, we're not going to do that anymore. It seems to me that there are other issues involved with eliminating those regulations.
I agree, but we have to do it. Small business in America are simply being strangled by regulation, and I think we've got to get away from it. We're getting close to the end of our time together, Dan. You have about 30. You have about 60 seconds left. Take the 30 that we have left before our intro and tell us how you feel about today's program.
I thought we provided a lot of great help today. And with that, I see we're out of time. So this is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.